politics. It gets ugly, but sometimes policy, good and bad, is the barrier you must change to help the most vulnerable and unleash opportunity. But how does it really work? This is the Breakthrough Podcast. Welcome to the Breakthrough Podcast. I'm Corey, and of course, Kelsey is joining me once again. This week, we are talking with Buzz Brockway. Now, Buzz has been at GCO for about the same amount of time I've been there and has worked in policy side of things. So Buzz is our VP of policy, oversees all of the things that we do at the Capitol. And we're in the midst of legislative session here in Georgia. So I thought it was a good time to bring you on, Buzz, and help people understand a little bit more about what you do. I know politics gets really ugly, but policy is kind of an interesting thing, and it's something that we have to address as an organization. When we're talking about poverty, policy is one of those things that can stand in the way of people having success getting out of poverty or staying stuck in poverty. And so first of all, thanks for coming onto the show and talking to us through all of this. But
happy to be here.
Yeah, well, thank you. But you have a bit of a political history in Georgia. So run people through a little bit of how you got involved with politics and why policy is kind of in your DNA, if you will.
Yeah, I was one of those kids that my uncle at when I was 16 got me a gift subscription to National Review. I grew up watching Firing Line with William F. Buckley. I was a real political nerd. The opportunity came to run for office here in Georgia, and in 2010 I ran for the state house in Georgia and won. Served 8 years. In 2018, I had the crazy idea that I wanted to run elections in Georgia, so I ran for Secretary of State, a statewide race, and obviously I lost. And if anybody's seen what happened in the aftermath of the 2020 election, I would be world famous just for whole different reasons. So glad to be at GCO.
Dodged the bullet a little bit there,
yes.
Right?
Like, absolutely, so. Absolutely.
That's great. That's awesome. So why policy? Like what was it about it that kind of like got you? What do you think was the thing that kind of caught your eye and why you've stayed in it? Because like some people get involved and just abandon it.
Yeah. When I was in the legislature, and one of the things that motivated me to run for the legislature, there were issues that I was interested in. Economic freedom was huge, just freedom in general. Was one of the things that motivated me to run for office. And when I got there, I really enjoyed working on bills, the minutia of art, the debate and the back and forth over, okay, should this be a shall or a may? Is the comma in the right place? I liked it a lot. And so
you're saying you like arguing.
Well, discussion, persuasion. How about that? Discussion and persuasion. How about that?
Persuasion is great, and you're great at it. So,
thanks.
Well, you've been doing it for a while. I think what's interesting every time we talk, Buzz, is like, what is the idea of like, what is it like to really be at the Capitol? Because I think most people, right, we think that it's a whole bunch of people that are way smarter than us, having like all of these like deep. Yeah, these deep conversations about policy and all this stuff. What is it really like at the Capitol, especially during session? Because we're right now, Georgia's, a lot of states are in session, right? They're deciding what's going to happen for their year, and usually it lasts for a couple of months. What is it really like at the Capitol?
Yeah, it's I know people will turn on the TV, and what you see when it comes to politics is what's going on in Washington. And that, unfortunately, a lot of that is just kind of performative. People are acting for the camera. That's how they get the message back home that they're, fighting for their people. And in a legislature like Georgia's, and I talking with other legislators around the country, I think this is true pretty much across the country. The people are there because they care about their community. They come at it from the left and the right. They have their passionate things that they're interested in working on. Many of them bring their expertise in whatever career or life experience they have to the Capitol and try to bring that to how they work on things. it's a lot less divisive and a lot less argumentative than what you see on TV. And, you know, the biggest arguments we had in Georgia, I mean, obviously, Republicans and Democrats, we have our core issues. When one of those comes up, you go lock heads and bang, you know, and fight over that. But a lot of times it broke down into urban legislators wanted one thing. Suburban legislators like I was had a little bit of different twist on that. Rural legislators had a completely different take. And so it wasn't necessarily Republican Democrat. It was, hey, I'm from a rural area. My constituents think X, Y, and Z. You got to look out for the farmers. My suburban constituents were, man, traffic is a huge issue. You know, so those sorts of things were more often than not, that's where dividing lines took place. And like I said, talking to legislators from around the country that I got to know over the years, that's kind of how it is. It's not as divided, more collaborative. States actually get things done. So
Buzz, do you think that the perceived animosity that people have of these sort of interactions, has that been exacerbated by social media? Because it does feel like platforms like Twitter, mostly Twitter, and even on the news sometimes, it's, you know, we're sensationalizing things and we want to get the biggest bang for our buck and the most eyes on our tweets and the most eyes on our programs. So you're saying that in actuality, when you're in the boxing ring, it's actually not as much of a fight as it is people just sort of representing different groups based on where they're from.
Yeah. I mean, I think social media has had a negative impact because it's hard to explain a complex piece of legislation in 140 characters that you get on Twitter.
In a soundbite.
Or in a couple minute video that you put on Instagram or TikTok or wherever. And it's easy to for folks to misinterpret something. And so they come, you know, groups come to the Capitol and they've read this and this person and, you know, said that, and they come down. But, you know, I think state legislators are a lot more accessible. So folks can come and they can talk. And if they're willing, which I think overwhelmingly most people are, they're willing to listen. Hey, I read this. Why are you trying to do that? And then the legislator says, well, actually, what it does is this, and what we're trying to accomplish is that. Then, oh, okay. Well, that's different. And then most folks calm down. And sometimes the feedback's valuable. Legislators were thinking, hey, there's a problem here. We want to solve it this way. Folks come and say, well, have you thought about that? You think, oh, actually, no. Thank you for bringing that to our attention. The unintended consequences were avoided. So, I think overall social media, because you're starting to see some people run for office, even at the state level, that are, you know, kind of like Yuval Levin talks about, they view it as a platform as opposed to they're there as part of an institution to do the job and to conform to that institution to make change that way. So you're starting to see that creep into some state legislators, and I hope that trend is arrested and stopped.
I mean, honestly, hearing you say that, though, makes me feel better about state politics. Uh-huh. I mean, honestly, from the outside looking in, it does look like everything is contentious. It's uh-huh. all red or blue. And, you know, and that's so it's very reassuring. So GCO, we do a lot around policy, or we do some around policy. What, like, as you've come into GCO, what has been the mantra? Like, what makes you decide that we should do this? We don't do this? How do you balance like what fights we take on, what needs to be handled from a policy level and what needs to be handled from a community level?
Yeah. I mean, we, you know, at GCO, we don't get involved in every issue. There are many, you know, center right SPN organizations that around the country that get involved in a whole broad spectrum of things. You know, we're focusing on education, work, and family. So how can we knock down barriers to help people get a good education, get a good job, return to the workforce in a lot of cases, and then have a healthy family life. So, you know, we're looking for those kinds of pieces of legislation. There's a lot of them every year because, you know, those are three really important areas of life that touch a lot of things. So mm-hmm. I think, you know, where we try to come down on is, hey, can GCO make a difference, a positive difference, either shaping this piece of legislation or helping a legislator use the research and the expertise that our GCO team has to better inform and have a better piece of legislation. And then, you know, so much of politics is about relationships and telling the truth. And you've got to be, you know, trust is the currency, honestly, of a legislature. You have to be able to trust that the person that is bringing you information is telling you the truth. They're going to keep their word and those sorts of things, you know, kind of basic human things, but it's really important in a legislature. You break trust with people and it's, you're going to have it's going to take you a long time to dig out of that hole. So I think those are the kind of things we try to bring to the table. And just, I think the tone, you know, we try to avoid, you know, manipulating people, trying to gin up support for things based on fear and anger, which is so much of politics these days. We try to avoid that kind of communication. And I think people respect it.
So a question I have for you, you know, you mentioned that trust is a currency and truth is important. And I guess my question is, because truth seems to be subjective or based on the lens through which you see it, and it seems to be the trend to want to make issues very binary, very black and white, even when they're not. How do you play in the gray? Like, what is effective for you? Because, you know, a lot of the policies that we work on, which I know we'll hear more about from you here shortly, but a lot of those are very nuanced, right? Mm-hmm. It is understanding that people might need help and also need, you know, a little bit of a nudge to do something for themselves. And it's this interplay of right and left and conservative and liberal and just making sure that we're focusing on a human being.
Yeah.
But that doesn't really conform to this much more polarized approach that a lot of people take. So what's your approach and what do you find is best for you?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's very valuable to be able to point to research that either we at GCO have done or research that we use to help inform our policies. So we're not just, you know, speculating, does such and such work? Well, it's research informed and data informed and, you know, history informed. And it's helpful in some cases to be able to point to other states and say, hey, look, they did this and it worked. We could do the same here and it could, you know, it would have a higher chance of success. Excuse me. I think my old congressman used to talk about, you know, Kelsey, you were asking how do we avoid things getting black and white. I think my old congressman said that he called it the three P's. There's principles, there's policy, and then there's politics. And so, you know, GCO, we're not, you know, the legislators are going to have to make the political calculation. The policy, you know, is, all right, take a school choice bill, which I know we'll talk about in a little bit. If we construct a policy a certain way, X number of kids will get be helped. If we construct it a different way, more kids will be or less kids. That's policy. And obviously, we want to maximize that. But, you know, those are things where they can be give and take on. But then there's principles. And so we always do our best to try to stick to certain principles. We don't ask legislators to violate, you know, principles that they hold, but we're going to debate on policy and we're going to let them and sometimes help them figure out to navigate what the politics are like around those issues. So we kind of look at it that way and that helps us play in the gray, so to speak, because as you said, on every issue, there's gray. Mm-hmm. Not everything, very few things really are black and white. So,
sure. Yeah, because policy is kind of that implementation of ideology, right? Like, it's like we all want to have good things come out of this, but the way you go about doing it it's gray, right? Like, I mean, it could be, it's going to have give and take, and you have to discuss that give and take and decide whether or not that balance of give and take is worth the fight or whether worth the compromise or whatever you want to
do.
So,
and there are some, I mean, you know, there are some compromises that are worth making and some where you're like, yeah, you know, we should just back out of this and go do something else. So it's not easy to know because if you've been working on something for a long time and you get down to a certain point, you say, all right, well, do we take this deal or not? So,
So let's jump into this year. Kind of like our primary focus. There's a lot of bills that we're involved with. There's a blog on our website where you can kind of go through each individual one and kind of see some different things that are going on. But like, what are those top couple of things, opportunities that you see happening this year at a policy level at the state. I know Promise Scholarships probably being the biggest ones that we've been wrestling through. But like, what are a couple of the top opportunities you think that we're really looking into?
You referenced the Promise Scholarship. That's Senate Bill 233 here in Georgia. And it would create a parent-directed account of $6,500 that the parent could direct to toward private school tuition or toward homeschooling materials or toward other things that are described in the bill, education-related expenses. It got through the Senate last year. The first time a bill like that had passed by either chamber, and it came up just short in the House. So a lot of effort and focus on the policy team and our comms team and our development team are centered around, all right, how do we get those last few votes that we need? So a lot of effort in that. There's some other education-related bills that we're working on to try to expand choice. Georgia has a tax credit scholarship program, for example. We're hoping to raise the cap because the demand is far outstripping the supply in that case. So as economists might say, the market is speaking, so we need to meet that demand. So that's, you know, and that's it on education. We're also doing a lot of work, as you know, on welfare reform that Georgia, that GCO has been working on for a long time. We've got a bill, House Bill 738, that would create a task force to see how Georgia could go about really streamlining the delivery of workforce programs and safety net programs at the same time. Make sure that work is at the center of safety net programs and that people getting the help they need. And so we've gotten some good traction on that here in recent weeks. And our friends in Texas have passed a similar bill. Our friends in North Carolina have implemented a similar policy. And I know our friends in Louisiana are working on that as well. So some good activity around that to really look at how we can help people, especially folks who need those sorts of safety net programs, can also make sure they're getting a good job. And then I think last, there's several bills we're working on related to occupational licensing. And that's just really, that's a topic that has become really important in recent years. We're seeing state governments and around the country kind of inadvertently, maybe sometimes, but increase the barrier to getting into certain professions. And mostly these are professions that where you don't have to go get an advanced degree. It's really, you know, things like cosmetology and barbering and being a plumber and a lot of great jobs that people can get involved in, can make a great living and support their family. So we're trying to make sure that there's the right balance between protecting safety, protecting the public from harm through safety or other things like that, and not protectionism that's just keeping people out of a profession that they are otherwise qualified for. So those are kind of, you know, this year, kind of the three big buckets we're working on. So,
and I think what's kind of the common, if you will, common kind of theme across those is like, we talked about this in the last episode, like upward mobility, right?
Yeah.
Like education being like, that's one of those things that locks people access, being able to access quality education in their community locks them out of the ability to prosper. Not being able to find a job or not having, or having a program that doesn't work to helping you find a job keeps people locked into a system of dependence on government. Things like occupational licensing, which seems like this obscure thing, but honestly, a lot of people that rely on those licenses or want to have a be self-employed in some of those mm-hmm. things, occupational licensing say, hey, no, you can't, you don't get to be part of that part of that job opportunity. And that really does lock a lot of people out of and the ability to move up or move out of their current situation. Yeah. And I think that being able to find those things and address them and speak to them is a really important part of our work, especially around the policy side of things. So.
Yep. Well stated.
No, thanks. They let me talk every once in a while. So,
so Go ahead, Corey.
Go ahead. No, please, Kelsey.
Yeah, I just of those, you know, three issues, you've got education, you've got safety net reform, you mentioned occupational licensing. Is there one where you feel like there is most opportunity for traction and success in this coming year?
Yeah, I think I think we're going to score some wins on in all three areas. I think the topic of education is where I think we're going to have our biggest win. It's the Promise Scholarship Bill, Senate Bill 233, would be a big win if we could get that passed. There's a lot of leaders in Georgia. The governor is supportive. The lieutenant governor is supportive. The Speaker of the House is supportive. House and Senate leadership on the Republican side are supportive. So I think that will be a big win. I'll say when that happens.
There you go.
Because it will really set us on a path to opening up doors for opportunity for people who need it most. And the bill isn't perfect. I know we've got some national groups that are weighing in. We know it's not perfect, but unfortunately, sometimes you have to play with the team that you have on the field, and you have to sometimes you have to know when to take a win. And this will absolutely be a win for Georgia. And then, you know, look, we're being transparent. Jamie Lord and I, when we're down at the Capitol, we're transparent with folks. You pass this bill, we're going to come back next year and try to expand it. Make no bones about it. This bill was introduced to be a universal school choice bill, which I know a lot of states have passed, and we want to emulate that in Georgia, and we don't want to rest until that's the case here too. So this will be step one.
That's great. And that's a good kind of final question to lead into is, because like you said, policy is oftentimes incremental, if you will, right? Like we make changes, we learn from that. What do you see going forward in Georgia? Like obviously opportunities in education, like where do you think the next big kind of challenge will be next year? Because I mean, we have to start thinking that far ahead. What do you think it looks like?
Yeah, even the Senate Bill 233, if it passes, it would open up an opportunity, depending on how much the legislature devotes in funding for this, you know, a couple hundred thousand students could take advantage of this. There's not seats in private schools to meet that demand. There's not, we need more robust homeschool opportunities across the state. Georgia has a pretty robust, but it's gonna have to expand to meet that demand to help parents step in and do that right if that's the option that they want to do. So I think part of what GCO is gonna have to do is pivot into that. All right, how do we help implement that? How do we help grow the sector to meet the demand? And that will be really important. How do we help inform parents so that they can figure out what is the best choice? Is homeschooling the right option? Is a charter school the best option? Is a private school, is a different public school the right option? So I think we're going to have to really step in and help on that front to meet the demand. And I think it will tie in nicely with something that Governor Kemp has initiated in Georgia, which he's calling the Georgia Match Program. What that is attempting to do is help literally match high school graduates with a post-secondary opportunity that makes sense for them, whether it's going to a university or college, going to a technical college, entering into a job training program. And that's awesome. What we've got to do is lift up the schools that are struggling the most in Georgia, which Senate Bill 233 would absolutely do, and make sure those kids have that same opportunity that every other kid in Georgia has to take advantage of those post-secondary operations, post-secondary opportunities. And when we do that, I think we will continue to have a robust job market in Georgia. We will have well-educated and prepared students for the jobs of the future, and Georgia will just continue to thrive, I think.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Buzz. We really appreciate all of your experience and your insight. For those that want to learn more about some of the things that we talked about and some of the work that the Georgia Center for Opportunity is doing in the policy space, you can visit us at www.foropportunity.org. And in the meantime, thank you so much for joining us on the Breakthrough Podcast, where we break through the noise and break down the details of issues that are important to Americans. We look forward to seeing you next time.